For KOSU News, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time once again for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neva Hill. Governor Mary Fallon orders all agencies to issue a hiring freeze, as well as a freeze on all pay raises and bonuses for state employees. Ryan, there was no mention of this in the State of the State address. Was it a surprise?
I think it is a surprise that it didn't make a mention in the State of the State. What it tells us is that the budget numbers are likely to be much worse than what we're looking at. I was out at the Capitol this afternoon, and some of my sources there are telling me that we can anticipate a shortfall. Right now it's around $300 million, that's going to ramp up to around $500 million. And then if you look at some of the liabilities on top of that, it is an enormous hole that legislators are going to have to try to plug this year. The agency request, you know, Steve Lewis recently had a blog post on Oklahoma Policy Blog's website, and he was saying that there's this disconnect between agency heads that are out there asking for more money, increases in appropriations, because they have shortfalls, and they have had for over 5 years now, and the actual amount of money that legislators are going to have to dole out at the end of the legislative session this year.
Neva, what does this mean for the budget coming up this
year?
Well,
I think one interesting thing is that we've got to make sure that these, as Ryan says, that these agency directors really don't use what is already there, and that's a way to get around this. I mean, they can go, they can get a cabinet approval or state elected official approval. They can make a request, and basically there are provisions to work around that freeze. And hopefully there won't be a lot of that going on, because I think what the governor was saying is that it is necessary that if they are going to be able to direct the funds that are going to be available to the services that are needed, they are going to have to rein this in. And, you know, one of the things that's been mentioned is that in terms of on the raise, on the point about raises, that two-thirds of state employees, that 26,000 or whatever number that it is, have received raises in the last 4 years. So, you know, I think it is a belt tightening time. It's not the sky is falling yet, but they do have big problems, and they're going to have to start looking at things like freezes to help curb some of that.
I think the sky is falling. I mean, and you know, I really think that the budget situation is frightening. I know that there are these revolving funds out there, but those offer maybe 1-2 years of solutions. We can maybe tap into the rainy day fund with some, with an emergency declaration. But this is very frightening. You've got Department of Corrections staffing levels at 60%. We've got shortfalls in child welfare workers out there on the front lines of protecting our children. This is a really frightening time for state budget and the agencies that depend on that money.
And is this almost kind of micromanaging, though? Because why even have department heads if you've got basically the governor saying you have to go to a state elected official?
I think it may lend to maybe another debate and argument from the legislative standpoint of it may be a time where the legislature is going to have to put all of this money, you know, in and really rein all of these loose funds and revolving funds and all of these dollars out there that really they don't do a good job of being able to really account for and see what really is available. So, I mean, I think, you know, again, it's back to the budget. I mean, they can't just kind of nickel and dime this. They can't, you know, look for short term. It's kind of like the across the board 6.5%, you know, cuts. And yet knowing that those cuts are only going to those small agencies because corrections and human services and education and all the big ticket agencies where the money is still needed, they're going to have to find additional dollars without question. So, I mean, it's a huge dilemma, but the elected officials are the ones that need to step up and start dealing with this and not just let agency heads and directors and people that are not elected really kind of be dictating the landscape of where the dollars are being spent and really the accountability on all of those dollars.
State Representative David Dank, the chairman of the House Subcommittee on Revenue and Taxation, says he refuses to hear bills which have what are called a negative fiscal impact on the state. These include more than a dozen bills with tax credits and tax breaks. Ryan, is this feasible?
You know, these are usually very popular. They have oftentimes very sympathetic constituencies that they impact, you know, retired veterans, the widows of veterans, you name it, right? I mean, these are groups that lawmakers generally like to stay in good graces with. But at the end of the day, Representative Dank is absolutely right. We have a budget crisis on our hands, and it's not one that we're going to solve this year, but we could certainly make it worse this year if we continue to dig the hole even deeper than we already have.
Neva.
Well, I mean, clearly, I mean, David Dank made it pretty unequivocal when he said that it's time to draw a line in the sand and stop, and that from his vantage point, the spigot is turned off. So I think, you know, I think it is, it's going to be an interesting give and take on the Senate side. We've seen some movement. You had Senator Mazie's bill this week that basically would sunset all tax credits, and then, you know, now you see some movement in legislation kind of in retaliation basically to that, where you know, some folks are saying, okay, how about let's look at all of the bills and tax credits that Senator Mazie's done in his career, you know, which is a dozen or so. So, you know, I think long and short is all of this finally gets to conference committee. I think they hammer it through all during the session. Whether they can come up with something out of it, I don't know, because you start talking about whose ox is getting gored in this. I mean, you've got some very powerful special interests that we know are going to be out there really putting pressure on these lawmakers, and we'll see whether they can withstand that or not.
And it's a heck of an investment. I mean, you invest, you know, and, you know, lobbyists aren't cheap, but I mean, if you invest, you know, $100,000, $200,000 in a lobbyist, that may seem astronomical to a lot of Oklahomans that are out there, you know, getting by on a lot less than that over several years, right? But the return on that investment in terms of the tax credits could be in the millions of dollars and hundreds of millions of dollars over the long term. And so from a business perspective, it's an enormous benefit to them, and they're going to lobby like heck to make sure that they can protect those benefits.
Absolutely.
New state superintendent Joy Hoffmeister ends the practice of field tests on Oklahoma students. Parents and educators had complained these tests were basically forcing our kids to do free research for the testing companies. Neva, is this a good move by Hoffmeister?
Well, I think where we are is that the State Department of Education has to determine, you know, how they want to move forward. They've got a big, you know, they've got a lot of things on their plate. And if they believe in concert with, you know, parents and teachers and others, that this is one thing that that makes sense, then, you know, then clearly I think they'll get a lot of reinforcement and support here on the front end to do that. I think the verdict's out on all of these issues on testing, just like writing the legislation component on the from the legislative side on all of this. But you know, I think the interesting thing is, I mean, we continue to talk about how much time it takes away from, you know, classroom, you know, real teacher in the classroom work with the students. After all of this is said and done, they've just got to figure out a way to do a better job of educating these kids and getting them prepared for the future. And if this is the road they want to go down, then let's see what the results are.
Ryan,
this is a good signal. We're you know, we have so many unnecessary tests that take away from instruction time in the classroom. If we can get rid of even one of them, that makes a big deal, a big difference for a lot of these teachers and their students and their ability to focus on actually real curriculum rather than teaching to a test. And you know, if Superintendent Hoffmeister has it within her authority to do away with some of these without having to go to the legislature to get permission to end some of these testing days, you know, this is a good thing.
A bill to crack down on so-called doctor shopping moves out of the House and onto the Senate. It requires doctors to check on an online database before handing out prescription drugs. House Bill 1948 passed by a vote of 64 to 30. Neva, all but one of the no votes were Republicans. Why do you suppose there was such opposition from the GOP?
Well, there's been opposition, you know, on this bill, you know, even from the last session. I mean, where they were not able to be successful in getting a bill like this passed. And this is a real compromise bill. I mean, everyone says, look, I mean, it's not a bill that a lot of people like much about, but everyone had to find something that they could kind of cobble together and make it workable. And so, I think that Representative Cox, I mean, as a physician himself, I mean, was the one at the forefront saying, look, I mean, we had to, there clearly was a need to move a bill through like this. And I think the fact that they were able to get a legitimate compromise, at least to move through quickly on the House side, is good news. And we'll see what happens on the Senate side.
And Ryan, Governor Fallon sort of supports this. So do you think she can kind of use her bully pulpit to get this on through?
Yeah, I think that she'll spend some political capital on this. But, you know, this is, I think, legislators mistaking harm elimination from, I think, a much more realistic goal of harm reduction. You know, to think that we can cut down on doctor shopping is going to end, you know, drug abuse, and in particular here, prescription drug abuse, isn't going to happen. You know, other states where they've seen sharp reductions in prescription drug abuse have then seen spikes in heroin use. West Virginia had a 300% increase in heroin overdose deaths whenever they begin to crack down on prescription drug abuse. I think that, you know, this may be part of a solution, but a bigger part of the solution is to free physicians and pharmacists and patients to have, you know, very open, frank management plans to help manage their addictions and reduce and mitigate the harm, rather than to think that we can just completely eliminate it. If we crack down and eliminate the source of one opiate, people are going to go to another one. I mean, that's just the way it is.
And I think when you think about, I mean, for the 4,500 members in the Oklahoma State Medical Association, I mean, they obviously were a very forceful lobbying component in all of this. And really, part of that compromise was the paperwork side. I mean, where these physicians didn't have to every single time they came up with the compromise of 180 days after the first prescription that they could go back and database this information. So, you know, there isn't a one quick fix. And I think the good news is if they would use this type atmosphere and try to do things where they can come up with some reasonable compromise everybody can live with, some of these big issues could actually see some resolution, and I think this is an example of that.
Yeah, I hope that they would take the same nuance with the paperwork, though, and look at the entire drug abuse scheme and realize that, you know, there's no bill, there's no legislative action, there's nothing that we can do that is going to end the demand for particular types of drugs, and in particular opiates. And if you're addicted to opiates, just by making it harder, you're going to go find something that's more easy to access and cheaper.
Sure.
And that's where we see the increase.
And as long
in heroin.
As we're one of the highest narcotic prescribing, you know, states in the union, that definitely is going to continue to
right.
be the case.
Two bills making their way through their individual chambers would institute the death penalty by gas chamber if lethal injection is found unconstitutional. Under the legislation, Oklahoma would be the only state to execute people by nitrogen gas asphyxiation. Ryan, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I'm sure that they'll. I hope to live long enough to have grandkids and be able to reflect upon a time of sitting in a legislative committee room and watching grown men and women discuss humane ways to murder people. I think that it's a fool's errand to think that we can mask what Judge Kaczynski from the Ninth Circuit called a savage and brutal act. And that's what the death penalty is. And he's a death penalty proponent. But, you know, he said that it was wrong for the state to try to mask this in some humane way. We should be faced with the brutality and the savagery of it. And I think that it's unfortunate that instead of having a larger conversation about the death penalty in general and it being a system that's broken beyond repair, that discriminates on the basis of race, income, geography, your ability to have an attorney, that we're having these bizarre conversations about more humane or inhumane ways to kill people.
Neva.
Well, I mean, we have to have this conversation because under current law in Oklahoma, lethal injection is the method that will be used unless it's ruled unconstitutional. And then based on where the state is right now, the electric chair is the second option. And I believe third option is the firing squad. And I think what we're seeing these legislators say is let's sit down and see, you know, what direction we go and what is the best best course to take. And, you know, other states are looking at it too, and clearly it's going to be litigated. I mean, whether we use this as the second option and we want to go down that road, Louisiana's already, I think, from their legislative standpoint, ahead of us in trying to kind of pursue this. So the long and the short of it is it's a question that will find much more time in the courtroom probably than it will even among the lawmakers.
Thank you very much. Ryan and Neva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.